My pleasure to introduce Suzanne Bélanger. She's the representative for the official language commissioner in the Greater Toronto Area?
In the province of Ontario.
In the province of Ontario. That's even greater than the Greater Toronto Area.
Oh, really?
And I met Suzanne at the dinner that we had for André Marin, and had an interesting conversation with her, and then it occurred to me that you folks would really enjoy hearing from her, because first of all, we're going to be talking about language rights today, and then second of all, many of you have questions about working for the federal government and how bilingual that you need to be. So it's a pleasure to have Suzanne Bélanger. Maybe you could say a bit about yourself, and I heard you talking a bit about your former work in the federal public service as well. Thank you for being with us today.
I told my kids, who are their age, that I was coming here, and they said, "Are you sure you can handle a whole presentation in English, Mom, without embarrassing yourself?" I said, "Well, I'll do my best." So I'm really glad to have an opportunity to speak to you. This class, and I'm sure that your teachers have talked to you, your professors have talked to you about the certificate that they're putting together, the French language certificate. That's all it took for me to be convinced to come and talk to you. It's more of a fondness for the topic, I guess. It's a little bit more than just a job. I've been a public servant for 27 years, not repeated. Most of them in the federal public service. I had a little bit of an indirect provincial government experience for 10 years. My background is environmental sciences, environmental engineering, and I've done like what you're doing, a public administration graduate degree. And I've also done something interesting. I have a Bachelor of Geology, which is on our wall in our office at home. And people say, "Why do you have a Bachelor of Geology? You've never been a geologist." What happened to me is that I wanted to learn English. And I didn't quite know how to go about it. My professors at the time suggested that there was this scholarship available for women in science to go and learn the other official language. That was way back then. Most of you weren't born. So my dictionary, my cat and I, moved to St. Catharines, Ontario, to Brock University, and where I spent 3 wonderful years learning all there was to know about geology and practicing a little bit of my English at the same time. That was helpful. Not the geology part, but. I was here when Mr. Marin was here as well to present what his role as ombudsman is. And I had the pleasure to meet some of you. And it was really interesting because I came out of here with a big smile thinking that your group are the leaders of tomorrow. You're the ones who are going to not only apply public policies, you're probably going to develop them. So it is a bit humbling, I guess, to be in front of you in that regards. Now, York University has a great relationship with the Office of the Commissioner of Official Languages. Glendon College, pardon, York U, has had programs in French or bilingual programs for quite some time. And now that there is even more in the future, it is my intention to come and visit your professors with the commissioner in January or February to see, not only to discuss the certificate that you're putting together, but to see how far we can push you maybe even more. So, the Official Languages Act, what is it? I found that out. So what I'll do is I'll read the preamble. And if you have questions, then we can keep them for the end. So I carry this with me at all times. And this is going to be. Whereas the Constitution of Canada provides that English and French are the official languages of Canada and have equality of status and equal rights and privileges. as to their use in all institutions of Parliament and the Government of Canada. Whereas the Constitution of Canada provides for full and equal access to Parliament, to the laws of Canada, and to courts established by Parliament in both official languages. Whereas the Constitution of Canada also provides for guarantees relating to the right of any member of the public to communicate with and to receive available services from any institution of the Parliament or Government of Canada in either official language. And whereas officers and employees of institutions of the Parliament or Government of Canada should have equal opportunities to use the official language of their choice while working together in pursuing the goals of these institutions. And whereas English-speaking Canadians and French-speaking Canadians should, without regard to their ethnic origin or first language learned, have equal opportunities to obtain employment in institutions of the Parliament and Government of Canada. And then it goes on about the selection of personnel based on merit, the development and the support of minority linguistic communities across the country, and the fostering and full recognition and use of English and French in Canadian society. So I chose to focus on the purpose, not on the purpose of the law, but on the preamble. Because a lot of the judgments on language rights in Canada, the courts have ruled often on the intent of the law. So the preamble, I would say, has been used just as often as the articles of the various pieces of legislation. So because we often discuss the rights of the minorities for French or English, because we do have a minority in Quebec that is English speaking, the law never, and you will notice that in the preamble and the entire law, we never talk about a minority or a majority. We talk about two languages with equal rights. And I think because most of our information comes from newspapers, it's important that once in a while people be reminded, this is in French we say, put the clock on the right time, that this is the reality, this is the law. It's equal rights in both languages. So a little bit of history. I don't know how strong your history is. There's never only one history. Being French-Canadian, I can tell you that. And if there was only one book, it'd be easy to get a history degree, I guess. I'll have a question for you. Which prime minister do you believe started the ball rolling on bilingualism? Volunteers?
Stephen Baker.
Good job. Who said that? You did. Wow. I wish I had prizes. It's always a surprise for most Canadians that this was the guy that actually gave some thought about bilingualism in Canada. He introduced simultaneous translation, which I can't pronounce. The Daily Hansard started being published in both languages. Government checks were issued in French. And very importantly, I'm sure, he nominated General Georges Pévenier as Governor General. That was pretty bold for a prime minister who started learning French in his late 50s, never mastered it, and was conservative to boot. He was a little bit ahead of a lot of the people in his party at the time. It's a small world, and I won't give you my personal Facebook page, but at the time, the former Prime Minister Saint-Laurent was my step-grandfather. So it's always a small world in the Francophone community. So in 1963, we have a new Prime Minister, Lester B. Pearson, and he decided that he wanted to know more. Him and his friends decided we need to know more about the bilingualism and the biculturalism of this country. So he did this, he put together this Royal Commission, which we refer to as B&B, It's easier for me to pronounce, I guess. That's probably what they were thinking at the time. So their observations were that French Canadians were not doing as well economically as their counterparts. They could not get federal service in their language. They were slowly losing their commitment to the Confederation. And Quebec was going through what was called at the time the Quiet Revolution, which, if you know a little bit of Quebec history, wasn't that quiet after all. So there were a lot of recommendations that came out of this commission. And at the time, nobody really discussed or disagreed with any of those recommendations. Then, I'll ask you, no, I just don't want to put you on the spot. Who became prime minister at the time, roughly? Mid to late 60s? That's right. And in 1969, Official Languages Act became the law of the land. Good times. Now, the act itself was amended in 1985 to strengthen the support to language minorities. It had some other minor tweaking, some regulations attached to it. But 42 years later, my boss, Monsieur Fraser, had to say this in this year's annual report. Forgive me for reading it, my accent is usually deterrent. Linguistic duality is a fundamental Canadian value, an economic asset, and a factor in social cohesion and cultural enrichment. The federal government must take advantage of every opportunity to reflect and promote linguistic duality. The government of Canada has not sent a clear message that respect for Part 7 of the Official Languages Act as a priority. Each federal institution interprets their obligations their own way. To better guide institutions, the federal government should enhance the Treasury Board's responsibilities and strengthen Canadian Heritage's role. Certain decisions made by the federal government in recent years, for example, the elimination, and we were talking about this. I can't see the student, now it's talking to you. You were talking about this. The Court Challenges Program was abolished in 2006. The mandatory long-form questionnaire of the 2011 census, And those were made without considering the impact on the official language communities. I could add to that some most recent Supreme Court appointments or appointments of the Auditor General, but we don't have that much time to discuss that part. So history is fluid, and I'm not so naive as to believe that politics didn't have anything to do with our rights, with the language discussions in the country. Of course, it's always about politics. Those are the people. This is the democratic system. So I just want to briefly quote now my boss, but when he was a journalist and a writer. And he wrote in one of his books, I brought the French copy, couldn't find an English one, for you to look at. His last book was titled, Sorry, I Don't Speak French, Confronting the Canadian Crisis That Won't Go Away. And a chance to find my quote, or I'll have to. I'll have to do it from. I'll take a book. Just give me a second. What he says in his book, before he became commissioner, is that we've been doing a lot of talking for 40 years. Or close to 40 years, about official languages. And after all this, we're still waiting for the next generation to put it in place. We're still discussing as if really nothing much has been done. He's quite strong about what English-speaking universities in Canada that are still treating French as a foreign language. It is being taught in the language department at the same place where you're being taught Spanish, Italian, German. And as soon as you leave Parliament Hill itself in Ottawa, you won't find bilingual signs anywhere in Ottawa. And if you follow the news, you may have seen that Commissioner Fraser has commissioned a study to see how bilingual is our national capital. Well, the newspapers had a field day on this. Like, who are we to police the national capital about this language? I can't wait to see the results. I'm there 2 to 3 weeks a month, and maybe I'm not looking in the right places. But a national capital is a national capital. And should Ottawa be bilingual? Subject for debate. So shortly after being quite strong in his comments about official language, the Official Languages Act, he became Commissioner of Official Languages. You know, if you think that it is that wrong, go and fix it, Mr. Fraser. So he's not only the commissioner, he's also the ombudsman. And you've learned from Mr. Marin what an ombudsman's role is. So he's that for language rights. He's often referred to as the watchdog of our language rights, which is a core Canadian value. So our commissioner's term is 7 years. Mr. Fraser has 2 more to go. He reports directly to Parliament. Not too many people understand what that means, reporting directly to Parliament. A lot of commissioners report to a minister who then reports to Parliament. Mr. Fraser reports directly to the people we elect. So when he goes out and speaks to Parliament, he has a little bit more freedom, a little bit of more autonomy in how he can report back to his employer. He has 5 reps. I'm Ontario. There's one for the Maritimes. There's one in Quebec. One in Manitoba, Saskatchewan. And the other guy has Alberta, BC, and the 3 territories. Small little territory. He spends all his time on small planes and and buses. Our office investigates complaints with regards to language, the 2 official languages. Half of these complaints are language of work rights complaints. And some of them come from some of the institutions that used to be national institutions, Air Canada, who still have obligations under the Act, even though they're no longer nationally owned. Our commissioner produces an annual report, and he promotes the key elements of the Act. Now, 2 years ago, Monsieur Fraser's office published a study called 2 Languages, A World of Opportunities, Second Language Learning in Canada's Universities. I was really pleased to see this in the proposal that Professor Dufour put together for this school, this management school, for the certificate in French. Your teachers are sharp. I know, you validate parking. In the years to come, there will be bilingual opportunities at all levels of government. And don't think of government as just only the federal government. There's provincial government, there's municipal government. And in getting ready by having all these tools in your toolbox, and in learning that other language, that second equal language, you may end up being with a really great advantage. Now, I skipped the Charter, 1982 Charter of Rights, because I can't do as good of a job as you do. But your professor, Green, suggested that I touch briefly on the impacts of the language sections of the Charter. The first impact is that a lot of very capable French-speaking lawyers have been and continue to be really hard at work to implement, to test, and to guarantee those rights to French-speaking and English-speaking Canadians. I just came back last night from a 2-day conference at the University of Ottawa, Faculty of Law, where we all celebrated the 25 years of the French Language Services Act in Ontario. Since the Charter, the because all of these things have been happening because of the language articles in the Charter. Ontario, in 1986, adopted legislation on services. PEI in 99. And Nova Scotia in 2006. And all these pieces of legislation were passed, and none of these governments ever went bankrupt. So if we include New Brunswick, which is officially the only official bilingual province in the country, and the territories who also have language obligations that were passed on through devolution by the federal government, we have what appears to be a fairly healthy political net around our language rights. But I wanted, because it's so fresh in my memory, I wanted to talk about the spin the letters around the French Language Services Act of Ontario and what it looks like. Because there are some elements in there, they might not be federal, but they have similar elements and they'd be great papers to write. So the first one is that language rights are based on territoriality. Numbers, percentages, if there's enough in this little part of town, part of the county, if there's a certain percentage, usually the threshold for Ontario, I think it's 5% or 5,000, something like that. 25 designated regions. 85% of French-speaking Ontarians have access to services. 85%. It doesn't mean that the other 15% don't need the service. It just means that 85% get the service. There are 40, unbelievable, 40 municipalities that have joined the Francophone Association of Municipalities, including Toronto, which just disbanded their French language committee. So there's a lot of great research papers around what are the obligations, for example, of a municipality who receives the service delivery components of social services from the provincial government. Are they still under the same official languages obligations? Private paper, if you have a system. So we're in Ontario. This is the largest number of French-speaking Canadians outside of Quebec. Same number as English-speaking Canadians in Quebec. In Ontario, we have two French-speaking colleges and zero French universities. In Quebec, they have three English-speaking universities. Why am I mentioning that? Am I bitter? I'm not bitter. I'm actually, they are demonstrating to us across the country how influential an institution, an educational institution is, as a symbol of what we value when we say that education is for all Canadians to, I'll use the word consume, but that symbolic value hasn't made its way yet for French-speaking Ontarians. So your generation, well, maybe you will sit on this one. You've never known a country or a province where the teaching of French was prohibited. Schools were closed. In 1912, Ontario passed Regulation 17 under the Education Act. And for over 60 years, up until the Official Languages Act of 1969 and the Charter of 1982, French was a second-class language in this province. It was a private language, it was a community language, but it was never a public language. I have many relatives by marriage, many friends, who did not have the full spectrum of their French language and culture in their education. Yet, the communities have prospered and are prospering even more today, and that's because laws have been passed, important laws. So before I leave today, because I said I was going to keep it short, I have to do my sales pitch on why you should consider the public service as a career. I wrote this morning thinking, what is it that we're looking for when we're looking for new people to join our organization? And the one word that came up first was leadership. Now, public service is all about leadership. But you don't need to be a government employee to volunteer. And you don't need to run for office or run errands for, you know, your elderly neighbor. This is all public service. But if you choose to join the largest employer in the country, and I'm including provincial government, municipal government, territorial government, this is the largest, prepare yourself to a great journey, but prepare yourself well. It's a hard job, contrary to popular belief. If you become senior officials at some point, you will know that there is no such thing as overtime. What you will do in this hard job is you will put in place programs, services that people you know will use or benefit from. It's a big responsibility. You will see changes in your employer's vision, because this is, your employer remains the people that are elected. This is who decides what's going to happen in the country. And because you believe in democracy, you will take on these sometimes challenging orders, and you will deliver them on the front line. Now, Canadians have a strong social contract, and it's based on shared values. It's a society that's based on human rights, equality, I've included generosity, the rule of law, workers' rights, freedom, environmental accountability, and the fundamental respect of two official languages in a multicultural society. Because we share these values, you and I, 34 million other people, we are lucky enough to get about 250,000 people every year that come to our country to join us in our adventure. These are the values that they come for, because this is the way we have been running our country, right? So this is quite the contract working for the government. It's not the easy job that it appears to be. And even in the smallest job, you will always be working for your neighbors, the people in your community, all the other, your fellow citizens. I did a workshop, a one-week workshop with some Swedish senior officials a couple years ago. The theme was the servant leader. It's not a contradiction. You need to be leaders, and I've stressed that, I think. You also need to understand that in that position, you are a servant. I am not here to tell you all about my own beliefs. I am here to tell you what my employer strongly believes in. So the federal government has identified some core competencies for public servants. Values and ethics, hard to measure, important. Strategic thinking, engagement, and management excellence. They didn't say management mediocrity, they didn't say, you know, minimum requirements, they said excellence. On our website, at the Official Languages Commissioner's Office, OCALL's website, if you can grab my card or go just Google it, as my daughter would say, you will see that we've developed leadership competencies profiles for official languages. So if at some point, a year, 2 years down the road, you think, you know, I want to join that organization, sounds pretty like a pretty good career for me, I feel like I can serve, go and measure yourself before you put in that application in. Check to see if this is the thing for you. And if it rings right, you will know that this is the right thing to do. Leadership behaviors are practiced. I keep saying use it or lose it. And I was so impressed, I mentioned that earlier. Some of the students I've met at your dinner the other night. They were on student council. They were in nonprofit volunteering. And some of them were in political ventures. There's never been a better time to look at a career in the government. Demographics are on your side. And the government is truly an employer of choice. Every day I feel lucky that I do what I do. And I think that is, I'm not the only one, I think. There's roughly, I think, at least 90,000 of us that will vouch on that. The rest of them, I don't know. And your teachers are forward thinkers. I'm not, once again, trying to, because this new French certificate will absolutely give you an advantage. But keep in mind that 40% of the jobs require a knowledge of the other official language, of French and English. And it's not just, would you get me a cup of coffee, please? It does require a working knowledge. So if you look, if you model yourselves about your future employer, the politicians, you will see how hard it is, but how big of an effort they make to achieve that bilingual status. And I'm sure that Mr. Layton, the late Mr. Layton, would agree that there wasn't a minute spent in his last election campaign in Quebec that was a waste of time. Once again, it's not just a box to check, it's a commitment. Once you have some of that knowledge, use it or lose it. Find an exchange, go on a trip, watch TV, go see a play, find a French boyfriend. These are all good ways to achieve the ultimate goal. It has to be fun. It has to be fun. It has to be about more than checking that box. It has to be about being in a position to come and meet class on a Saturday afternoon. People who one day, when I'm in my old people home somewhere, you will be making the right decisions that will affect my life at that time, and you will be able to explain that to me in my language of choice. Reject perfection. Wow. Reject perfection. You know, the biggest thing that will prevent you from advancing in learning that second language is perfection. Do not wait to have it 100% to try it. I have a friend, her name is Mary. She's executive director of a big agency here in Ontario. And Mary learned French in advanced French, which some of you might have gone through in high school. Not immersion, advanced French. Mary loves French. Mary will speak French no matter what. Even if it's a quick phone call to me, she will insist it's in French. Sometimes it takes a little longer to get to the point, but she just loves that language, and I love her for it. Because she, as a perfectionist as she is, she just let go, and she just dove right in. Sent her kids to French school. She had the right through her husband, his grandmother, I'm not sure. So now her kids, who are my kids' age, of course, are in their 20s, they wouldn't even think to talk to me in English. They never even think about it. Just turn to me and it switches automatically. It's a beautiful sight. I've also made a new friend. His name is Max. Just a friend. I'm married. But Max, I keep meeting that man in different organizations. I first met him, it was at the annual meeting of French for the Future. I encourage you to go on their site, wonderful site. And I've also met him at the provincial annual meeting of Canadian Parents for French, which was started here in Ontario and is an organization that supports the language of, the education in French immersion. And that those parents are really brave. You know, they're sending their kids to French immersion, and some of them don't even know a word of French. You really need to be believers to do that. And this gentleman this week came to the law department at the University of Ottawa with a room of about 250 Franco-Ontarians celebrating our 25 years with the new law. And in French, warts and all, he just explained to us how wonderful it was that he had the opportunity to meet new friends, make new friends, and practice the language that he believes is important to our country. He's getting a Christmas card, that's for sure. And then there's me, the one with the accent in my family. My kids learned it very young, English, I mean, and French too, they had no choice. I wouldn't have fed them. But in my pre-coffee state, that accent is a lot thicker than it is now. So if you do dabble or decide to entertain learning that other official language, chances are you will be approximately 10% richer in your career. Statistics don't lie. You will be able to tell your friends that you watched a French movie. You'll understand what that label on that good French wine, as you're making more life, says. And in conclusion, really, I wanted to point out that Toronto researchers have confirmed studies that speaking more than one language is beneficial for the brain and delays the onset of Alzheimer's symptoms by up to 5 years. So personally, I'm a little richer. I'll have my mind a little longer because I learn English. So it wasn't probably as technical as you would have liked it to be, but my goal today was to trigger your interest into not only language rights, just the right and the courts, and the more than that. I want you also to consider what it means for the country, how it's been there since 1867, how we still have a long ways to go to not to talk about it anymore or to pretend it doesn't exist. We have different phases in our history, I guess. And I hope I maybe also have triggered your fancy about considering applying what you're learning now in the context, not the confines, but the context of a public service career. It's not a bad move. Your friends will look at you funny at the beginning. And then they will see all the great things that you can do. I, in my career, have worked or lived everywhere in the country but Newfoundland, for no specific reason. I've been to Gander, that doesn't count. My children have seen and lived in most parts of the country, and I feel good about it. I feel good about myself. It was a good career choice for me. Might be for you as well, might not be. At least you'll have a chance to think about it. So, questions?
Question over here.
Yes, ma'am.
How do you think Canada's multicultural nature affected or influenced at all the fulfillment of the French project?
You know, we in 1971, the multicultural effect became law, and there's no doubt that there was some the politics behind it. May have been to ensure that that learning a second language was also part of accepting the new mosaic of our country. Canadian Parents for French, if you go on their site, I've seen their statistics. The greatest number of applicants to French immersion programs now in the Toronto area, just Toronto School Board, are Canadians that have been in the country for less than 10 years, who were not born in this country. Our new Canadians have come here with dreams for themselves, but a lot of dreams for their children. and they do believe that this is an advantage. So they take full advantage of those opportunities. That's why I'm saying, if you go to CPF's website, you may get some strong statistics on that. If you look in L'Express, which is a Toronto Francophone newspaper, you're online, just monitor it occasionally. And you will see once a year, they publish graduation pictures, you know, like the big centerfold, you know, 200 kids graduated. And look at the mosaic in there. In terms of immigration, there were some changes to the French Language Services Act that allowed us to count those numbers. I talked briefly about territorial issues. We now count Francophones for whom French is not the first language, it's their first official language. So here in Ontario, we have a larger number of Francophones, but they're not the traditional French Canadian, Ontarian, Franco-Ontarians. They are new Canadians that have chosen French as their language. If you go and Google something called La Passerelle, I'll give it to your teacher or I'll spell it later. They just started a wonderful program on what is a Francophone immigrant in Ontario. And you see success stories in there and you see some very inspirational things. So the multiculturalism has brought to us new Canadians that are very diversified. And they choose their path according to, well, of course, where they land, whether their first job is in French or in English. I mean, there's, you know, all the little fine details of it. But it has been, at this point in the game, a very positive enrichment of not only our numbers, but an enrichment in changing our culture into a more modern culture, more inclusive culture, which I think I can say most French Canadians were not known for a certain time in our history.
Any other questions? Yes.
Just when you were speaking about the provision of the social services with municipalities, I thought that was very interesting because that's actually a conversation that, like I work in the OPS, so the province is having with municipalities right now in terms of, you know, if a municipality were to give the province the service delivery rights and social services, you know, to City of Toronto services or City of London services being delivered by the province, do they now have to be delivered in both official languages, right? Because in the municipal sector, they don't have those rules. And the other issue is provincial government also interacting with the federal government, but then also the issue of having private service providers in terms of what is their commitment, I guess, under, you know, the Official Languages Act and things like that in terms of providing services, you know, with public-private partnerships.
Well, the public-private partnership has been solved. There's been a regulation, a recent regulation under the French Language Services Act. And it will be in full effect in 3 years, which means that the current providers have 3 years to, in the 25 designated regions, they have 3 years to accommodate that specific requirement from the provincial government. The interesting part is the municipalities. Some people might argue that municipalities are a creation, an administrative creation of provincial government to deliver some basic services, from water to sewage to roads to. So if you're in the province of Ontario, pretty much the entire territory has signage in the two official languages if you're on any provincial highway. But then the road gets into a certain municipality, you know, just a little municipality in between, and even though the provincial government is actually the one that are footing the bill for the road, it doesn't necessarily mean that signage will be in the two official languages. that is probably the next, I think the next door that the Commissioner of French Language Services, Monsieur Boileau, who's been in his position for 4 years as Commissioner here in Ontario, he's a former employee of our Commissioner, just one of those strange things that happens. But I think this is his next venture, is if you are in receipt of government dollars that where there's a linguistic clause attached to, should that move forward with. The precedents are federal, Air Canada, Via Rail, National Film Board, there's a whole section in our act. The difference with the French Language Services Act of Ontario, it only has 14 points, I don't know what you call these things, 14 paragraph clauses, thank you. So only 14. We have a few more, so we've been at it a little longer. But this is definitely, for me, a very, very interesting point. Specifically, since 40 municipalities have joined this AFMO, which is Association of Francophone Municipalities, including Toronto. And the reason they joined, it wasn't really because they thought we were really nice people and they wanted to get to know us better. They joined because that opened markets for them. That opened some exchanges with other countries that allowed them to participate in Francophone games across the world and whatever country is hosting them. And all these opportunities that are available to them. So sometimes, and that's going to be a personal reflection, when I say that 85% are getting the service, 25 designated areas, 40 municipalities. I just need to go down the road from my house. I can get my driver's license in French. I can, my kids did all their education in French. There's a part of me that say, you know, like, what's the logical next step? You know, we're that close. And yet we haven't had that discussion. Should Ontario, where there is the largest number of Francophones outside of Quebec, cross that threshold? So you know what? In reality, that's basically what we are. But that's for somebody else to decide at some point. It's for you guys to decide when you are the ones deciding, right?
I think we have time for one more question because there are other student presentations after this thing.
You mentioned about a quarter million population of immigrants that come here to Canada. I deal with a lot of internationally trained economists that come over, and the variance between somebody who's unilingual and bilingual is around, the salary variance is around $18,000 to $28,000. But are there policies or programs within OCOL that are directed towards the internationally trained professionals that come as a huge population of the immigrants?
Where I think we're missing some of that is the recognition of credentials, which usually is being handled by the professional associations. I don't know if I'm touching exactly on what you want to discuss, but the fact that, you know, I have a girlfriend who came here with a, I can't pronounce that, anesthesiologist, and she was trained in Italy and in Scotland, and she came from one of the African countries. And this has been 10 or 11 years, and she still cannot get into that program to make her a doctor. So she said, well, you know what, I'm going to go and get a law degree and work from there, which she did. We have a lot of new Canadians that come here, and I don't think it is a fallacy to say a lot of cab drivers are engineers and those kinds of things. And those are things we need to address. But those are association-based, you know, the doctors, AMO, or Association of Medical Professionals. Same thing with the engineers, same thing with all those designations. And that makes it hard sometimes. There are different types of ways to come to Canada, as you know. There's, you can come as an immigrant, you can come as a refugee, you can come as someone who's going to invest if you're going to start a business. I mean, there's so many different things now that you might be able to get around to it.
Thank you.
What I just really wanted to touch upon was the contradiction within the whole hiring with the, within the federal government, because it does say to qualify to be able to apply for this role, you have to either be a permanent resident or a Canadian citizen. But there are no programs that are targeted, like ESL training, per se, for immigrants that come. And I come from a country where English predominantly has sort of become our first language in India, where we speak more fluently, I would say, than some of the Canadians I've met in Canada. So for them, French would be, what I would say is for people like that who are coming, who are completely fluent in English, and they do not need to access services for ESL, should they not be given provisions alternatively to access, to learn French as a second language, perhaps? Because they're the ones who are going to raise their kids. I also deal with students who are now at Ryerson University, where I teach economics, and we have enforced French, two French courses, beginner and intermediate, as important, like they have to take it, it's required of them to do it. Because, and what more and more I'm realizing is they don't know, or the parents themselves have not been educated, that French is really important. So perhaps this is something that OCOL should be looking into, that those who do not want to access ESL services could be given the permission to access French language services.
I'm totally in agreement with you. The commissioner has some restrictions. He doesn't deal with education being a provincial level, and it is true. If you want to learn the other official language, you have to register in classes. You have to pay out of pocket. Not an easy thing to say. With the current climate of restrictions in public service, we will see most likely a reduction in the dollars available for training for public servants who only have one of the two languages. The reason being that it was, you know, the use it or lose it again. It's something that people were doing every 5 years. It takes 6 months to go fresh and then take the test and then forget all about it. If you go on our website, you'll see things like not only the leadership skills, but how to go beyond bilingual meetings. That's what we can do at the federal level. At the provincial level, the Department of the Ministry of Education and the other one, colleges, training, and university, not necessarily in that order, they're the ones who have to bring these opportunities to community colleges, not necessarily at cost, but the competition and the competition between universities is fierce. The competition between colleges is even more fierce, if possible. An interesting point would be for McLean's annual report, for example, to have one of their criteria being, how well prepared am I to be a leader of tomorrow? And it's one of the things that will happen. That discussion will happen with the McLean's editorial board, hopefully in January or February. Mr. Fraser Cummings, much better than I am at that. And that would be interesting, because then when parents make their selection, they will see other avenues than McGill, and McGill and McGill. And they might also see that there are opportunities. If you haven't done it in your primary or secondary schools, you might have an opportunity, like you're going to get here, to have a little bit of that before you go forward. Is it the government's responsibility to look after all of your training needs? I guess it's my question to you.
Well, Suzanne, I'd like to thank you for coming out. Before you go, before we clap, I just want to say that we would love to have our photograph, all of us, taken with you for our newsletter. So I'd like to thank Suzanne for being here. But don't go away. Gather up at the front.
I'm so shallow.
Thank you very much.
I brought a few things at the front. You're welcome to take them.
I was actually going to talk to you because Dr. Lee told me you were coming. So I do have the Department of Economics now. As a part of our degree, we actually source the students what muscles. So that was a core requirement for them to do a French beginners and an intermediate course. And I have to tell you this, once I became a part of this whole epoch of development and started realizing how important it is to be bilingual, because salary barriers for someone who's graduating out of university and wanting to go to federal government is 46.
So the students are beginning to realize that, oh, I'm sure you'll be glad to hear this, our percentage of students who are graduating from the program has gone up by 54% last year. So I think possibly we I think it would be great because the teachers are still there because what's happening is that we would be doing ourselves on the Mandarin. One of the up and coming like we don't want to lose the
people. Yeah, we don't want to lose the people.
I think
Oh, wait, one more.
Now, did you park illegally or with a parking pass?
I'm just kidding.
At the next dinner, we'll come.
Yes.
Make a special point.
Thank you so much. This
my pleasure.
What a great cost.
Would that usually
be? Wait.
This, if you flip it over, it's English and French dominant. And I use this all the time. There's some lunch and there's a coordinating to my house.
Yes, we do. Thank you so much.
Yes.
I
meant it. I will come back and watch.
Yes. Well, that would be interesting.